Hello, everybody. Welcome to another Talking Feds one-on-one Patreon exclusive. I'm here today with Professor Nadjeri Mathis Rutledge of the South Texas College of Law in Houston, where she teaches Crim Pro, forensic evidence, and legal research and writing. She's a former prosecutor, I know, but it wasn't in your bio, Professor Rutledge. Where did you prosecute?
I was with the Harris County District Attorney's Office, one of the largest DAs in the country.
Yeah. And what was the sort of bread and butter of the office?
The bread and butter was mostly misdemeanors and felonies. Houston is a very large city, the third or fourth largest in the country. So we have our share of crime, whether it's juveniles or adults.
Yeah. Anyway, from that background and just generally, you know, because she's a professor and interested her, Professor Rutledge wrote about the Bill Cosby case, as did I, and we had op-eds around the same time. Let me start by asking how you decided to write about it.
I had met Mr. Cosby in college, and so the entire case was on my mind, and I have a brilliant colleague who was writing his own opinion. And it didn't capture what I really wanted to say myself. And I started to stay away from it because it's such a hot topic.
Right.
And it's really easy to get in trouble talking about topics like this. But I had something important to say, and I thought people were missing something important in the conversation, which was the role of the prosecutor.
Great point. And let's return in a second. For those who can access the article on USA Today, you can see a picture of you with Bill Cosby in 1983. Every time I see Bill Cosby now, you know, America's whatever they called him, it's so strange, the cognitive dissonance. He looks so different now. Yes. just seeing him through the prism of the present. All right, so you wanted to make a point about the prosecutor, and that I think was important to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court as well. So what were your thoughts about the case and the role of the prosecutor?
The fact that a prosecutor is not just any lawyer, and a prosecutor is not the government lawyer. A prosecutor is an instrument of justice. And unlike any other lawyer, our duties, at least in Texas, is in the Code of Criminal Procedure, it's in the American Bar Association. It's not our job to convict, but to see that justice is done.
Yeah.
So when a prosecutor gives his or her word, it means something. And there's so many important ramifications. And I think people were missing that aspect of it.
Yeah, so I see that totally. And the Supreme Court really was emphatic about it. On the facts, I was on a TV program trying to make the general point. And somebody who was there also was actually on the prosecution team. And she unloaded with two barrels on me about all the reasons that the agreement by the former DA was informal and anomalous and didn't really stand up. But I thought basically that all cut the other way, you know, where it's a very important right, the right not to incriminate yourself, and it needs to be knowing and intelligent to waive it. So if a prosecutor has been equivocal about it, I think that's bad for the prosecutor, and it's the prosecutor's responsibility at her or his peril to really stitch it up.
Absolutely. I mean, even though they didn't do the formal requirements of immunity, it was almost a form of de facto immunity, right?
I think that's right. I mean, and he certainly thought so, and Castor, who I know is a controversial figure in my own home state of Pennsylvania, testified that he meant it. So to me, you know, if the whole thing had been completely speculative, maybe just a statement in a press release, okay, then maybe it wouldn't be fair for a defendant or Cosby to seize on it. But the court found, and the people I've spoken to, including people who disagree with me, don't dispute that Cosby could reasonably rely on this, even if it weren't true. And to me, that, you know, is basically dispositive. A prosecutor says something to you, you can reasonably take it to be an assurance that you don't have to waive your Fifth Amendment right or you won't incriminate yourself. You do it anyway. They can't say, just kidding, right?
Right. You can't have a bait and switch. This worked out the exact way Castor had planned. Castor wanted to try to squash those that right of self-incrimination and make him in a position where he was forced to testify.
Right.
He even reminded
in the civil suits.
In the civil suit.
Yeah.
And so to put Cosby in that position where he was forced to incriminate himself, and even the following DA knew about it. I mean, Castor, to his credit, even though he's a controversial figure, even wrote them. And I don't know about you, I don't see too often where a press release is signed as well. So he did, even though he didn't do all the steps for an immunity agreement, he took a lot of steps to make it plain, this is my plan of attack to get Constand some measure of justice.
Yeah. And are you finding that you're taking a lot of heat for, you say it's a charged subject, of course it is. Are people up in arms with you about the op-ed?
Surprisingly, no. Now, I never read the comments unless they come to me directly. So unless you reach out to me on social media, I'm not going to go to USA Today and look up a bunch of anonymous right. comments. But I've gotten a lot of support. A lot of people were like, thank you for explaining that to me. I don't like it, but it makes sense. And none of us should like it, right? But we should rejoice when the law is followed and applied fairly.
To even a very prominent defendant or a notorious one. I mean, we've right. seen that kind of rule of law stretched or challenged over the last few years. And you know, that's what a court really is supposed to do. So, you know, my sense is that I've taken also much less guff than I expected to, though I've certainly spoken with friends who are, you know, distraught or are really shaken up that it ended this way. But I think lawyers, at least, and as a lawyer, I have way too many of my friends are lawyers, but they that it seems a pretty comprehensible principle. And maybe even for society in general, people understand that the most abhorrent defendant has constitutional rights. And yeah, I expected to take more heat than I did.
I agree, absolutely. And that's why I started with saying people are looking at through the wrong lens. And even though we want to protect victims, the Constitution wasn't about victims.
Right.
It really was about the right of the accused. And that's really hard for people to accept.
Have you had any situations like that when you were a prosecutor? Where you had to let people walk, even though it felt wrong in that case, but just because of your obligations?
I've had victims mad at me. One of the things I did as a prosecutor was being in the family violence division, where we would have complaining witnesses who changed their mind and recanted, and I had to go forward. So I've gotten, you know, all kinds of anger about, you know, why aren't you dropping this or why did you drop this?
Right.
And in the end, I remember very well arguing for punishment in a sexual assault case, and the defendant got 40 years. And it was a really tough case. The victim literally came to court with a paper bag because she was hyperventilating. And when I got back to my office, I have another victim literally just cursing and furious at me, an identity theft case, because the defendant only got 5 years. And one of the things I tried to communicate to her was this. The victim who watched her assailant, her rapist, get 40 years, that wasn't enough time for her either. It's never yeah. going to be enough time. Even when you see someone get the death penalty, you don't get that sense of relief you're really waiting for. So that type of justice is really fleeting. And I also think it's a little unfair for so many people to say this is going to, you know, kind of stop victims from wanting to come.
Yes, I wanted to ask you about that. Please, because I'm, you know, they're implicitly saying is, well, maybe that's the law. But of course, even if that were true, you'd have to say, well, I'm sorry, but that's the consequence. But what do you think about that? It seems like such a special, sui generis case. Would it really, in fact, keep victims from coming forward? And it sounds like you've worked with a lot of victims, and including even victims of sexual assault, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah, so what's your kind of intuition there?
I don't think it's going to hamper victims from coming forward more so than the rape culture we're already in. Mm-hmm. The very sad truth that we need to eventually address is this. Why is it that 60 women went through this horrible ordeal and didn't go to the police? These were women who chose not to avail themselves of the criminal justice system for some reason. And there were great reasons for them not to want to avail. Rape cases are hard.
Yeah.
And we don't always treat our sexual assault victims fairly. So I understand the reasons why they didn't, but they didn't avail themselves. And here we are, and they're saying it's not fair. But what if, when Kaysen was doing this investigation, one of the things they said in the court order, the Supreme Court case, was this. Kaysen looked and he interviewed and looked at what the statements were from the other accusers, but he could find not a single criminal complaint. I find that really shocking. And I think we really need to delve into how can we empower victims to come forward.
It's true. And it would be interesting to try to see. I mean, this case sort of takes place. Maybe it's the first big kind of Me Too trial. You wonder if it might be different today. Well, in any event, I have to say I was expecting or looking for more of a sort of dispute out there and having to play the sort of nerdy lawyer and explain, et cetera. And I feel buoyed that people generally accept, even with great frustration, the principle that drove it here. And I think your op-ed helped to, in the newspaper of the largest circulation in the country, of course, helps that to happen. So anyway, pleasure talking to you. Hope to talk to you again on Talking Feds.
I would like that. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. Take care.
Thank you.